This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I'm so glad you're joining me. As you know, porn is one of my favorite topics ever. And one of the most exciting things about feminist porn is that it is such a growing genre that it feels like there's a new feminist pornographer born every day, which just really warms my heart. Now, this particular guest I have on today was not born every day or yesterday, but she is doing really incredible work, and I want to spread the word about what she's doing and dig into how it all came about. Let me tell you about her. Polita Papel is a sex-positive feminist pornographer. She's the founder of Lustery.com, a platform dedicated to the sex lives of real-life loving couples from around the world. She also co-organizes and curates the Porn Film Festival Berlin and is one quarter of the Ersties podcast. Papel has worked as a film producer, performer, and director. Lately, her main interest lies in what she defines as documentary porn, a porn genre that documents the sexual lives of real people. This was the reason for creating Lustery as a platform and a community that focuses on genuine intimacy, passion, and enjoyment, and aims to provide a realistic depiction of what actually happens in people's bedrooms. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Paulita.
Hi, Tristan. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So you, one of the things I love about what you say about yourself is that you identify as an exhibitionist and a voyeur. By the way, really good qualities in a pornographer. My question about that is, how did you realize that you were both? And did you embrace that part of yourself right away? Or did you have shame to get over? How did you fully come to say, in the light, I'm an exhibitionist and I'm a voyeur?
So it was actually a very long process. I am originally from Spain and I grew up there. I don't know if you've been there before, but it's a very Catholic fascist country. So definitely a lot of shame and guilt surrounding sexuality, especially as a person being socialized as a woman. So I actually had to flee from Spain and come to Berlin to find like a sex positive community where I could fully embrace those like tendencies from me. I think I realized I was an exhibitionist just because I was fascinated by the idea of porn. And I always just enjoyed, just watching everyone around me, I guess.
And did you get your start? I know you've done a lot of films for Erica Lust. Is that where you did your very first film?
No, actually, my very first film was with a filmmaker, Marit Östberg. She's a Swedish pornographer. And it was great. She was casting. I didn't know her. And then I met her and I was super excited about participating in her film. It was a no budget queer feminist film. So I wasn't in for the money. I was in really for the politics. We always joke about that. We always talked so much more about shooting porn and doing porn than we actually did shoot porn. I mean, we only did a couple of movies. But it was all about like building the community and like, you know, finding our ways of representing our own desires, bodies and selves.
I actually met Marit, and I also read her thesis. She did a graduate thesis on porn. Right. She's so, so smart. I love her. I met her in Mexico City.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
And so, okay, so you got your first taste of this And then you thought, oh my God, there needs to be more. how did the site Lustery come about?
So basically what happened after me doing queer feminist porn is that I realized, oh, I can also earn money with this, which is pretty good. And I kind of like, basically due to my profile, I end up doing mostly, girl next door porn. And that, you know, brought me from Abby Winters to Erstis.com. I started doing more production. And then I started working a lot with people that were just starting to shoot porn. So basically what you would call amateur. It was all about, it was so much talk about, like, you know, this whole what is authentic sex, blah, 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 how do you portray it in camera. And I do think that the term authenticity in porn is very problematic. However, I was interested in capturing the real intimacy and sexual dialogue that exists between two people in their private lives. And I figured the way to come the closest possible to capturing that was to have two people that are together, they're having an ongoing sexual dialogue and romantic relationship with each other, and they're alone in the privacy of their own homes, and they are in control of the camera and try to make the camera part of their game. And that's how the idea of Lustery came about.
And so why focus on real lovers? Why, what is the draw for you?
I think for me, it's like, so basically for me, for example, I am a very promiscuous person. I'm like pansexual, polyamorous, and I love one night stands. And from my personal experience, when I'm having a one night stand with a person that I just met, I would say that a lot of what thrills me there is the performance. Like, I'm obviously performing for myself and for the partner that I chose that night. And I do see a big difference, again, in my own performance when I'm having sex with someone that I just met than with someone that I've been having an ongoing sexual relationship with. And I was just interested in capturing that, like, what happens once you maybe, once the performance part of sex maybe does not become so relevant, and you're maybe focusing more in, you know, how, not so much on like how do you look, but what does feel right.
And you said this, that the question of authenticity is one that lots of feminist pornographers have wrestled with. In the mm-hmm. States, authenticity became kind of a hallmark of the early feminist porn stuff. By early, I don't mean way back in the 80s. I mean like in the early 2000s. People talked a lot about these are real bodies, real people, real pleasure, real orgasms. But since then, people have gone on to kind of problematize that and just expose the kind of various contradictions. So where do you fall on the authenticity argument?
So I agree that it's problematic because I think it's false in a discourse that is saying like, okay, porn performers are not real people, mm-hmm. which I just think falls into the whole stigma against sex workers in general, and just, you know, reinforces sex negativity. So that's why I think it's problematic. You know, I find also this very strict separation between mainstream porn and whatever alternative or feminist porn as it being like good versus bad. I find that, again, very problematic because it is just reinforcing those old school values and silencing voices within the mainstream porn industry that are very valuable, I think, and legit.
Right. And it's hard to even, I mean, one of the questions I've always had is like, how do you measure authenticity? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It seems like a really, it's so subjective. It's so personal. It's like if a viewer connects with someone and they're what they're doing and what they're saying like resonates with them, they probably read it as authentic. But mm-hmm. there's always this sense of performativity if the camera's there. And so some people may be better at performing authenticity than others. And then some people may be having authentic experiences and the camera just happens to be there. But it's like a complicated concept.
It is. I completely agree. For example, for myself, in my performer experience, like I tend to perform in a way that a lot of people would like see as, I don't know. For example, my girlfriends always used to have a big issue watching myself performing in porn because they were like, but you look like you're really in love. Yeah. And I'm like, well, but I'm performing and I'm apparently convincingly performing that I'm, you know, very much in love with this person that I just met and I'm shooting a porn with. So, it's definitely, I do not agree. You know, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, no, you can see it, right? I'm like, no, you can't see it. Like, I think it's way more complex than that, as you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all depends on the viewer and kind of how they engage it. I mean, there's this phrase in the States about pornography itself and about obscenity, which is, you know, people are constantly dodging how to identify obscenity, especially in legal terms. But there's this sense of like, I'll know it when I see it, you know, which first of all, leaves everyone open to interpretation. And it depends mm-hmm. on who is the seer in that equation, right? Because then who defines what is porn versus art versus erotic film or whatever it is. But I think it does put the onus on the seer in that people can have all these multiple readings. Like they can see a performance and someone could say, that was amazing. That was so real. Someone else could say that was performative. Someone else could say that was hot. I don't have an opinion one way or the other about how real it was. So it's like a thorny subject.
Absolutely, I agree. I think it's just, and it should not be on any viewer to define it, right? Because then, like, depending on your cultural background and your moral and religious background, like, you know, you would have very diverse opinions.
And also sex workers themselves have said that my quote-unquote real pleasure should not be a requirement for my job. Right. So mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I've heard Andre Shakti write about this, who's a sex worker, who said, like, I'm coming to do my job and I'm going to do a good job and I'm going to be present and I'm all the things. But if you tell me, like, I have to have a quote real orgasm or I have to experience quote real pleasure, that is too much of a burden. Like on a sex worker, just tell me what you want me to do and let me do it. And if I have fun in the process of doing it, great. But I also may just have a really ordinary, neutral time, and that has to be okay too.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's job. So you do have better right. days and worse days. It shouldn't be, that should not be the way to judge it.
But there is this thing called chemistry. And for me as a viewer, I see it. I feel it. It feels palpable. You can tell when people have a connection, and that connection may have happened a half hour before they got on set, or they have maybe mm-hmm. together for 10 years. But I do feel like there are just certain performances and certain people who resonate really strongly with me just as a viewer. And to me, it's like just the chemistry or the body language or the way in which they look at each other or interact.
Absolutely, exactly. I agree. And I think, but again, that could also be a performance.
Like, that could be a performance, exactly.
You know, I could be performing that I'm having this amazing connection, and yet I've just learned and I have the resources, like the performative resources, to show you that and to make you believe that. I mean, it's the magic of cinema, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break. I want to shout out to my amazing sponsor who makes the show possible, The Pleasure Chest. Go to pleasurechest.com. You can find out about all their weekly events. They have tons of free sex ed. They are just wrapping up Anal August, but that doesn't mean there won't be anal sex classes for the rest of the year. Of course there will be. So stay with us. More with Paulita. We're going to talk all about Lustry. We're going to talk about the European queer feminist alternative porn scene. Lots coming up, so don't go anywhere. Are you ready to fall in lust with the Pleasure Chest this September? Well, the first thing you've got to do is take advantage of their great Labor Day sale. Spend $100, get $10 off, plus free ground shipping. Use the code LONGWEEKEND from Friday, August 30th to Monday, September 2nd. That's LONGWEEKEND, and this sale is only online. Plus, there's more. Every fall, the Pleasure Chest focuses on their inclusive and accessible pleasure education program. Pump up your pleasure IQ with a free workshop at one of the Pleasure Chest's 5 locations in LA, New York, and Chicago. All workshops are open to adults 18 and over of all genders, sexual orientations, and relationship statuses. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram or check their full fall-winter lineup of free workshops at pleasurechest.com/events. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Hey, I've known Holly Randall for years. I actually did a profile of her and her mom for the Village Voice more than a decade ago. Holly's podcast is part of Pleasure Podcasts, and you should definitely check it out. Finally, a woman in power in porn who has real talk with performers about their jobs.
Hey guys, I'm Holly Randall, and I am an erotic photographer, director, and producer. I started a podcast called Holly Randall Unfiltered, where I interview the biggest names in the adult industry. My goal with this show is to show the world what the adult industry is really like and what really happens behind the scenes, what these porn stars are actually like as people, not just as performers, and show the world this is a real job. We actually take it seriously, and we have a lot of fun doing it at the same time. So make sure that you tune in to Holly Randall Unfiltered. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, you name it. And come learn what the porn industry is actually like.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with sex-positive feminist pornographer Paulita Papel, who is the founder of Lustery.com, which you've got to check out, Lustery.com. And it's a platform dedicated to the sex lives of real-life couples from around the world. So, Paulita, where do you find your people? You're from Spain. You're based in Berlin. I've seen people of different ethnicities and countries on your site. So how do you find them?
It's been a long process. We launched Lustery.com in December 2016. At the beginning, I just started asking friends from like my right. sex-positive community in Berlin. And it was a lot of like, you know, word of mouth. Currently, we've come to a point where we saw there are people find us and come to us. So we have a lot of submissions, which is amazing. And I'm so grateful and happy to, it's just amazing to reach out or like be reached out from people from all over the world. Like, yeah, again, last week I had a Skype with someone from Indonesia and it was just like so amazing to hear about their experiences. Anyway, so a lot of people reach to us nowadays. And we also actively, you know, search for also for content creators online.
And would you say half of the people are from Europe? I mean, do you have any stats on where everyone's from?
Good question. I should have prepared these, shouldn't I? I can just guess, to be honest. I should know. I think most, definitely most people are from North America, Europe, and Australia. Mm-hmm. That is the same. That is similar, for example, in the Porn Film Festival, like the films that we receive. But we do have also now more and more people from whole Latin America, South America, and Middle America. And we have some people from South Africa.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, that's really fascinating because I think, first of all, there is a sort of identifiable feminist porn movement in North America, in Europe, and in Australia. And so I think that necessarily has created more dialogue, even more mainstream coverage and more discussions around pornography. But there is this question of what is everyone else doing? Like you said, South Africa, Indonesia. I mean, it's an opportunity to have a kind of glimpse into the sex lives of folks that we don't see represented in porn at all.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, taking this example, this couple from Indonesia, I mean, she was telling me, I mean, the woman was working in a like feminist, in a queer feminist collective that is doing like sex education. And she was, you know, and they're doing patches and tote bags. I don't know. It was just super fun to have this conversation with her. And then at the end, I mean, we spoke for like 2 hours. And then by the end of it, I was like, so how are you feeling about last year? And then we're like, we really want to do it. Only we're still a bit scared at the consequences that we might, the repercussions that this might have if people find out in our communities might be overwhelming. You know, and I was like, ah, damn it. Which is something that anyone can say. Like I've had a lot of couples from Europe and North America saying the same thing. Only I feel the, you know, the scope of the negative impact that this can have in this case, for this couple in Indonesia where pornography is basically just illegal. It's just, you know, it's another league of risk that they're taking. So yeah, there are, you know, there are obviously differences.
I mean, the stigma exists everywhere, but it is different in different places. And I know one of the things that you say on the site is that folks can agree to have their material only within the closed community. It's a membership-based site. Mm-hmm. And so they can say, I only want my content seen by members, and I don't want to appear in, for example, trailers or things that are accessed by the public. But then we have the issue of piracy and copyright mm-hmm. infringement and the fucking tube sites. So how do you kind of protect your content and by extension, I guess, your performers?
Mm. This is a very important subject and something that we're, you know, dealing with on a daily basis. Every time a couple decides to go for this, we have different contracts, as you say, they can decide, you know, where they want us to post their content. And we, of course, only do that as we agreed. But I always tell them, especially when they go for the exclusive on the website on lastyear.com contract, that they need to be aware that content is going to be pirated. Like, it's not like, it's not even like there's a possibility that it might get stolen. It's like, no, it is going to get stolen. Like mm-hmm. We don't have a download option. And that's one of the things that we've put in place to try and prevent piracy. We have outsourced actually our content protection. We have a company that is, you know, every day just like searching for links and bringing it down. We do everything we can, and still there's no, you know, there's no way to completely stop it. You can only do that much, and we do like all that we can, basically. But I do, like, so that's why I always tell the couples that they need to be aware of the fact that there is that possibility, and they need to deal, like, they need to be okay with that. You know, you need to be like, okay, what's the worst case scenario? And then, like, what's the answer? If your answer is like, oh my God, if, you know, whoever person would find this out, I would, like, I don't know, kill myself, then don't do it. You know what I mean? Like, because then the risk is too high. But then I think it's important when you go into this worst case scenario, and then you're like, okay, well, worst case, I will like either ignore this or talk to the person or blah, blah. And actually it can be very empowering, you know, to go through that process and be like, no, I actually really want to do this, and I stand behind it, and I'm, you know, I'm happy to take this risk even.
Yeah, I mean, with the way that we are living under technology now, there is no such thing as a closed system, right?
No.
There are these so-called like private Facebook groups, but people screenshot shit from that all the time and post it, you know, on their own blogs and on the internet. And so there's kind of no wall that people can't break through, essentially. And so people's images being out there, I think you have to work to find them, because it's not mm-hmm. like you are a content farm who's literally pumping out clips and sending them directly to Pornhub. Obviously not. But it's an interesting conundrum kind of for the non-porn performer, right? To think about what does it mean to create these sexual images. And one thing that I loved, I heard you say in an interview, I read it, you said this is about the act of reclaiming your own gaze. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit.
Absolutely. I think, I can talk about my own personal experience. I think from me growing up and like developing my sexuality, a lot of this process was about how I looked upon myself, upon my own body, and how I judged my sexuality. And I think for me, performing in porn, it was a way to look at myself with new eyes somehow. Like just like, you know, just presenting my own body and my own sexuality on camera, and then being able to watch it and to be able to watch it with 100 people in a cinema, for example. It was just it just helped me really redefine the way I look at myself and see myself with different eyes. So it was freeing and empowering in a way that I think a lot of people can experience, because I think especially people socialize as women, but of course everyone else as well. We're so influenced by the whole imagery that we see on, you know, TV commercials, films, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's a very long and hard process to get rid of, like, what have I learned? What have I interiorized in respect of how I judge and perceive my own body, and how can I get rid of that and found to myself and what I want to do with it? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and it's also a fascinating concept, because I feel like everyone knows about sort of the male gaze, what it means when mm-hmm. predominantly men are creating representations of people who are not men or who don't identify mm-hmm. as men. And then we've had these other discussions about, like, the female gaze, right? What happens when a woman steps behind the camera and creates representations? How does that shift? And then we can talk about, like, the queer gaze and various mm-hmm. other marginalized identities. But the notion that you are it's got this quality of the sort of the rise of the selfie, which is like the notion that you've set up the camera, right? Mm-hmm. There's no one actually behind the camera. You essentially are, or you're holding up the phone and filming the action. Who gets credit for that gaze? And like you said, it's your own. It's essentially how you want to be seen, or how you see yourself, or how you want to sort of share yourself in this image.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's such a need for it. Like, if you think of, yes, exactly, the selfie culture, of course, social media, but also if you go, like, to the nudes and, you know, Tumblr, which before the ban,
rest in peace, Tumblr.
Rest in peace, Tumblr, exactly. Like, there's such a lack of images, of imagery, of diverse imagery of sexuality, I think, right? And then, you know, I think so many people don't see themselves represented in mainstream media. I mean, I'm not talking about mainstream porn, I'm talking about mainstream media. And then, you know, yeah, it's amazing actually to have your own phone and be able to shoot your own sex videos with your partner, with whoever agrees to do it. It's such a, I think we can see that a lot of people, you know, are so into it. And so if there's this big need, it's like, you know, it must be, there's something about it.
Well, and also the role of the camera as a kind of pleasure object. Mm-hmm. Right, the role of the camera as part of the sex, as part of this gets back to the voyeurism and the exhibitionism, right? Mm-hmm. That the camera is itself, for many people, a turn on.
Absolutely. And I think it's also so fascinating, or such a interesting experience, to look at your partner through a camera. I always tell the couples that they can, you know, they should really try and show that, you know, not show me what they think other people want to see. It's like, show me what you like to see, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also an interesting way of kind of like mediating desire between people. If they each take a turn at the camera and film each other, and we see kind of what they see.
Mm-hmm.
I love it as a kind of sexual act in and of itself. I love that idea that it's not like separate from the sex. Like, we're having sex and the camera is over there, but the mm-hmm. idea that it's like actually incorporated into the sex is really an exciting idea to me.
Absolutely. I think it can be such a turn on.
Okay. So we're going to take another break, hear from our great sponsors and advertisers who keep the lights on here, people. So you should show them some love. When we come back, more with Paulita Papel. Stay with us. Nowadays, we all need a break from the stress and the chaos. It's nice to experience joy, dive into love, and escape the everyday, even for just a little while. If you love love stories, romance novels, and erotica, then you need to try Audible Escape. It's a new monthly subscription that provides unlimited listening to romance books, plus Audible Originals, stories you can't get anywhere else. Whether you're already hooked on reading romance novels, you love watching rom-coms, or you're looking for audio content that sweeps you off your feet, you're going to get access to over 18,000 romance titles. There are favorite authors of mine like Susie Bright, Rachel Kramer Bussel, Zane, Heather Novak, Allison Tyler, and Rose Caraway, who's both an editor and an amazing narrator. There is queer romance, African-American romance, erotic romance, even books like Speaking Sex to Power, The Politics of Queer Sex by Patrick Kalifia. And five of my books are on the service, including my erotica book, Stripped Down. Plus, who doesn't want to listen to a book called Thong on Fire? Join the community and try your first month for free. After that, it's $12.95 a month. If you are already an Audible or Kindle Unlimited member, it's just $6.95 a month. There's no commitment and you can cancel anytime. Download the app to explore all the love stories. Visit audible.com/Tristan to get started now. That's www.audible.com/Tristan.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. You know, I like to have a discussion about feminist porn every now and then, or maybe all the time on this show, because it's really important. And people are always asking me, where do I find feminist porn? Because I'm here to tell you folks that if you just Google feminist porn, you're going to get taken to the tube sites, and that's all bullshit. They've just owned all the keywords, and they have like the best algorithms with Google. But here is another place for you to go to see a really different kind of porn, and it's lustery.com, L-U-S-T-E-R-Y.com. It was founded and created by Paulita Papel, who is a sex-positive feminist pornographer. She's from Spain. She's currently living in Berlin, and we've been talking about the site and some of the content on it. So as I looked around, I did spy a real-life professional porn performer, although not having professional sex, but having sex with her partner. And that was Kimberly Kane. Mm-hmm. How did you make that happen? You know, she is one of the most well-known porn stars in the States, and I'm sure she has international appeal, but how did you find Kimberly?
So for me, it was very important to welcome any kind of sex worker and porn performer onto Lustry because, as we were talking before, you know, porn performers are real people and they have real partners and they have real sex. For me, it's very important that, you know, that's just something that I need to like reinforce and I like to comment. And I was actually just reaching out to different porn performers that I know. And you know how it is, they're super busy because they're, you know, porn stars.
Right.
And Kimberly was actually someone that replied very positively about it. She liked the idea, and she just decided, you know, also to participate in Lustry, also to support the platform because she thought it was a cool concept. And that's how we came together.
That's fantastic. I love that. So I want to talk about the sort of relationship between you and really one of the only other porn sites that takes this approach. Because that's the thing. It's like we've got a bunch of porn sites out there, but there's really no other game in town that's similar to yours except Make Love Not Porn, which is a website founded by Cindy Gallup in 2011. It sounds like it's anti-porn, but it's not, for those of you who are just hearing this. She's very much pro-porn. Cindy conceptualizes her site as a kind of social networking platform where what people share is the part of their lives that they share is their sexuality. So she sees it just like going on FetLife to share your kinks and fetishes, going on Facebook to share your cat videos and your surgery updates and your memes. Cindy wants to kind of shift the discussion around what it's okay to share online and what it's okay to share in public or semi-public spaces to kind of destigmatize and take shame away from this notion that a photo of you on the internet, either naked or having sex or both, could, quote, ruin you or ruin your reputation. So there's lots of parallels here, and I'm wondering what you see as the relationship, how they're the same and how they're different.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely make love, not porn. As far as I think, yeah, the name is actually not great chosen because it does sound a little bit anti-porn. But other than that, I think it's an amazing platform. I think the work of Cine Gallup is so important and relevant. And I think in the spirit, we're sister sites, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're aiming to create this community and this sex positive and safer space for anyone that wants to join. To show and share their sex life. I think one of the differences from the two platforms is the focus maybe. So for basically Slaster is a members play platform, so members have to pay monthly to access all the content, whereas in Make Love Not Porn you pay per video, I believe. The reason why we decided to go this way is because, you know, there's this common belief, I think, that this kind of porn or sex videos are super, like, badly done. This is, you know, it looks like it's very badly done and the quality is, like, super bad. And we think it does not have to be that way. So basically what we're doing is, like, we're supporting and helping and guiding the couples to make the best out of their videos. And that's a big part of our work. And we edit the videos ourselves in-house with an amazing editor that we have. So we're also, like, you know, narrowing the barrier for people to decide to do it because they don't have to deal with those technical parts of like editing and so on. And thus we're creating kind of like a bit more of a curated content. So our videos are all full HD. You know, they have a minimum length. They have different camera positions and so on and so forth. So basically what we're doing is like we're investing in the production. In the production part so as to have like a curated content that has like that serves some standards.
Well, this also begins to blur these lines. You know, you talked a lot in the first segment about these kind of binaries that are set up, good porn, bad porn, mainstream porn, mm-hmm. non-mainstream porn. And this is kind of blurring the line between amateur porn and not amateur porn, right? Because we do think of amateur porn as being low production value. People watch it kind of for their sense of realness and authenticity, but they're like, but the sound may be really bad. So this is kind of bridging the skills that you have, that you know, with the people who kind of want to do it. But I also think this piece about membership is very interesting because you are cultivating a community. I think that's the other really radical part of this is that I do think that porn can sometimes be seen as this really individual experience. Individualism runs very strong in America under white supremacy and capitalism. But also porn, it seems like, you know, the stereotype, of course, is porn. You're watching it alone. You're watching it. You're watching the tiniest little clip of it just to get off. And you're never sharing like your interests or your desires. We've broken that down. We know that couples watch porn together. We know that porn can be playing at a sex party or at a dungeon. We've even seen porn on the big screen, which is super exciting. But it does seem like this kind of individual consumable thing, and then it's done. So the notion that porn could actually be a central force in bringing people together, that sexuality and images of sexuality and desire and pleasure could be a basis for a community, is pretty subversive.
I agree. And I think that is definitely one very important part for us creating this community. I think I see that in a lot of the Skypes that I have with the couples when they're, you know, deciding to participate and we're guiding them about the production process, that that's one of the thrills for them to shoot video for Lustre is being part of this community. And they're like, listen, we don't know people around us that are like-minded that, you know, that would do this. And we're so happy to have found this place where we can watch other people's videos and share our own. And it's, I think that there is a huge part of it. And I do think it's, it can be subversive and it can be just so empowering and just freeing and great.
Yeah, I love the notion that we don't have to think about sex, talk about sex, have sex, consume sex in private. you know, this mm-hmm. other binary of sex as private, something that you wouldn't talk about at the dinner table, that you don't talk about at work, that you, for various reasons, but like that you don't talk about in public, right? That you mm-hmm. wouldn't just talk about in a cocktail party because that's not appropriate. And these sort of respectability politics around that. Mm-hmm. So I love the notion that this is like there are people out there and they're talking about what they like and talking about what they saw and commenting on blog posts and meeting, you know, there's these short videos where you're kind of meeting the couples, which I love on your site. I do think it's an important shift. It's an important shift in the way we sort of take sex out of the dark corner or the other side of the tracks or the high top shelf that you can't reach kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, I agree. And I think, you know, for me, I sometimes forget because, of course, I talk a lot about sex and pornography at work, right? And I just live in this bubble where everyone talks about sex work and porn and whatnot. And sometimes when I step out of, when I go to Spain and visit my family, I'm like, oh, right, you know, the real world. That's not okay to tell the anecdotes of the last porn shooting here.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, exactly what you're saying. This taboo is such a big part of people's negative feelings about their own sexuality, about like feeling shame and guilt. If you cannot talk about, you know, your desires, your kinks, whatever it is, that creates such bad vibes. And I think it's so important to start up a conversation. I think just watching other people talk about it can be such a, you know, such an inspiration, and it can help you to find the right words even to express yourself and talk about your own sexuality.
Yeah, it can be really freeing.
See? And I think another thing that you mentioned that I think is also really important is the way it's very typical to consume porn just as in like looking at this 1 minute you were sharing. Like mm-hmm. I go for this clip and I just, you know, I don't really engage. I'm just searching for the, you know, the tag of like, okay, cam shot or whatever. No? Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a game changer when you actually decide to take more time and engage with the film and watch not just, you know, 1 or 5 minutes, but actually watch the whole 30 minutes of a couple like starting to get into it, blah, 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 and the whole like process. I was reading an article not so long ago where someone said that they made the experiment of trying to change the porn behavior in that way, and they felt a positive impact in a lot of other parts of their lives. For example, their concentration by reading became better.
Mm. Yeah, because we are this sort of like quick kind of culture. And I think that's especially true for sex. And I also think it's partly about the shame and stigma. See, I've definitely been in the room. I love porn on the big screen. And, you know, it used to be a staple here in the United States, but, you know, where you go to theaters and watch it, and it's not anymore. So it's like this rare treat. You know, like Erica Lust came and presented a bunch of her ex-confessions, and it was on this huge screen, and it looks so beautiful and amazing. But I've also been there when, after 5 minutes, people can get uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. They can get uncomfortable watching this stuff because we're not exposed to it, because there are all these taboos around it. So the idea that you could sort of mindfully engage with something for more than 5 minutes that is sexual, that is arousing, that is titillating, but also maybe makes you think or you see yourself or you identify with a character. I think it's an interesting practice to try to just sit with it and all the feelings that actually may accompany it. Mm-hmm. We have to take a break. I can't believe we only have one more segment left. That's pretty crazy.
No.
Hey, kids, yeah. I want to know from you, my listeners. I know you're not kids because that would be bad because only everyone over 18 listens to this show. So I can't even believe I said that. I want you to call me and tell me what you think. What is it like for you to watch more than 5 or 10 minutes of porn? What is it like for you to watch porn with a different agenda other than just sort of getting off? I want to hear this. So call my voicemail line, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Also tell me on there if I can play your clip, because sometimes people send me a recording and say, I don't want my voice on the air, so then I can simply transcribe it and read it as a comment. So consent always, people. Let's take a break, and when we come back, more with Paulita Papel. Are you ready to fall in lust with the Pleasure Chest this September? Well, the first thing you've got to do is take advantage of their great Labor Day sale. Spend $100, get $10 off plus free ground shipping. Use the code LONGWEEKEND from Friday, August 30th to Monday, September 2nd. That's LONGWEEKEND, and this sale is only online. Plus, there's more. Every fall, the Pleasure Chest focuses on their inclusive and accessible pleasure education program. Pump up your pleasure IQ with a free workshop at one of the Pleasure Chest's 5 locations in LA, New York, and Chicago. All workshops are open to adults 18 and over of all genders, sexual orientations, and relationship statuses. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram or check their full fall-winter lineup of free workshops at pleasurechest.com/events. Various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me and my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking today with Paulita Papel, who's a sex-positive feminist pornographer. She is the founder and the brains and the beauty behind Lustery.com, which is a platform dedicated to the sex lives of real-life loving couples from around the world. It's a membership-based site where you can meet these couples. They're all people just having sex with each other. If an adult film performer pops up once in a while, it's them having sex in a really casual environment. But the lighting and the sound is really good. So that's good. Now, another thing you do, as if you don't have enough to do, Paulita, is you are one of the co-organizers of Porn Film Festival Berlin. Porn Film Festival Berlin, for people who don't know, has been around since 2006, and it's a film festival that, of course, shows independent and alternative films that focus on sexuality, politics, feminism, gender issues. It's been a great place for feminist pornographers to submit and show their work, and it's become, as it has gotten older and older, kind of the it festival. So it's like porn's version of Sundance, right? It's like where everyone goes. There's also a lot of shooting during the Porn Film Festival because people from all around the world come. And then you can all of a sudden, you know, cast all those actors that you wanted to, but you didn't know if you could fly them in from, you know, Germany or France. So the next one is October 21st to the 27th. Tell me about what we can expect. Tell people, if they've never been, what it's all about.
I think, yeah, for me, it's like the highlight of my year. It's a week where I feel most at home and within myself in this cinemas. And as you were saying, it is a great meeting place for everyone in the industry and everyone interested. But also it's just for anyone who's curious to watch porn on the big screen, which is an amazing experience. If you haven't done it, you should. And also just to start a conversation and get the chance to talk to performers, producers, filmmakers, and ask them the questions you always wanted to ask. So for us, it's very important that a lot of people join and are there after the films to have a Q&A. Mm-hmm. And we also have a program around it with lectures, panels, workshops, and parties, of course.
Of course, the parties. And I think Madison Young's film is going to open the festival this year. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. We're super excited. We decided to show Bathing in Memory, which is Madison Young's latest film, produced by Last Productions. or La Cinema, sorry. That's going to be the opening film. And it's great. It's going to be the world premiere, and we're really looking forward to it.
How many people come? Like, how many attendees are there?
So here's what happens. Every year it gets more and more. Mm-hmm. We're around the 10,000 tickets, I think, last year. A bit of a problem that we have is that we don't have, like, this year we have a bigger cinema room, but basically it's so packed, and we're not even promoting it much more because we're like, we don't have the space to fit everybody. No, but it's great. It's so much fun. Like, even in, a couple of years ago, I used to get like really crowded in the evenings, and now it just gets even really crowded in the Sunday morning, which is insane to me. And it's just so much fun.
Some people are early risers, mm-hmm, and they want to watch their porn at 9 a.m. Well, you know, running out of space is a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, on mm-hmm. the one hand, it's great because it means the popularity is growing. I'm wondering if you have run into any issues around censorship, around people not willing to work with you, venues in Berlin.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say Berlin is one of the easiest going cities of Europe, I would say. There's a lot of people are super sex positive. There's so many sex parties and so on. So it's quite chill. We haven't had like big problems, but we have had some rejections. Like there has been venues that have told us no. They've never said it's because of the porn. They say like, oh no, we're completely booked out, like mm-hmm. totally no mm-hmm. no space whatsoever. No, I'm like, and what about no space, you know. So that happens. We've also, what happens a lot is that we don't get films, like some, especially films that have state film funding or that have like televisions attached to them. Sometimes the directors want to show their film in the festival, and they're like, oh, cool, I love your festival. Yeah, I want to show my film there. And then the producers from the TV or from the state film funding, they're like, no, there's no way we're showing this film in the porn film festival. So that's a problem. Mm. And other than that, we haven't really faced so much censorship. I mean, we had once someone complaining about our posters, which are not, like, they're safe for work. But someone complained about them being, like, publicly, like, in front of the cinema. And then police came, and they were like, well, what's the problem? We don't see any problem here. And they just left, so.
Well, this is the ultimate thing, which has also been going on with internet censorship, right? So if everyone can agree, like, on YouTube that they don't want to show porn, they don't want to show explicit sexual images, there are still people who are being censored for talking about porn, mm-hmm. for literally just using the word, right? So just mm-hmm. the question of whether the word is offensive or obscene is preposterous to me. And yet that still goes on, that the word itself is considered obscene. These are words, people. They're mm-hmm. literally words. Everyone's got to calm the fuck down.
I agree. It's outrageous, really. And that's what happens, again, as you were saying, like the Porn Film Festival Berlin, the reason why we're called the Porn Film Festival is because of like reclaiming this word. And,
absolutely.
And people get really visceral reactions to it. And it's just like, yeah, chill, you know?
Right. No, it carries all the stigma. Like you said, these mm-hmm. folks who may have received funding from the state, they feel like, well, we can't associate with, even if there's sexual content mm-hmm. in this, blah, 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 we can't associate with it. So it's like still that sort of heightened stigma. And also just this major censorship. Like I'm so glad, you know, I know Berlin is really amazing when it comes to this stuff. And I've been there and I've been to events there. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's different than the United States. But I feel like in the US, we're continually coming up against this problem. Someone I know who has a really great podcast, Sluts and Scholars, was recently shut down by Apple Podcasts, and they had to sort of like fight their way back onto the platform. And the thing that they told them is the writing, when you write and describe your show, like when you have your show notes, mm-hmm. those were too explicit. And it's like,
What?
I mean, first of all, all of our podcasts are labeled explicit content. So, mm-hmm. but it's like, these are just words describing what they talked about on the show, and mm-hmm. Apple wants to censor it. It's like really problematic.
It's very problematic. It's so much fear. I mean, and so much, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just so wrong in so many ways. And yeah, it's pure censorship. And it's because it's silenced in so many voices. And it's, but it's again, a way of like blocking education and,
Absolutely.
It's just horrible.
Well, let me tell people how to find you, how to find the Lustery community, which is Lustery, LUSTERY.com. Paulita is at Paulita Papel on Twitter and Instagram, PAULITAPAPPEL. The website is at Lustery HQ on Twitter and at Lustery POV on Instagram. Thank you so, so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, but today Corey's on the board, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. Hey, if you want to go to the platform where you're listening to this show and leave us a review, that really helps spread the word. Until then, I am on all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show, with some great live tweeting, is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Until next time, people, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.